The role of Birkenau. Birkenau, of course, performed the normal functions of a German concentration camp. It quartered inmates for the principal or ultimate aim of exploiting their labor. Thus, when we refer to the role of Birkenau, we are referring to a theory that Birkenau was the site of certain very special functions that bear particularly strongly on the matters we have been considering. The theory, which I consider beyond dispute, is simply that Birkenau was designated to accommodate all persons who were in the non-worker category but were, for whatever reason, the responsibility of the Auschwitz-SS administration. Thus, Birkenau was designated to receive the permanently or semi-permanently ill, the dying, the dead, the underage, the overage, those temporarily unassigned to employment, and those for whom Auschwitz served as a transit camp. These categories could have been received either from other camps, including the many small camps in the Katowice region, or from incoming transports. This theory is based on the following considerations. First, as has been noted, Birkenau was clearly the principal camp in terms of inmate accommodating functions. Auschwitz I was the main camp in an administrative sense, but it was a converted and expanded military barracks, while Birkenau had been designed from the beginning as a much larger camp, intended for the specific needs of the SS operations in the area. Second, it has been noted that people discharged from the Monowitz hospital as unfit for work were sent to Birkenau. Third, family camps existed at Birkenau, the Gypsy and Theresienstadt camps in figure 29 contained in the print and ebook editions of this book. It has been seen that these people had been designated as being in readiness for transport during their stays of pre-specified limited duration, so that the obvious interpretation of these family camps is that they were transit camps, comparable to those that existed at Belsen and Westerbork. The destination of transport has been suggested, and will be discussed further in Chapter 7. Fourth, it was only at Birkenau that unusually extensive facilities for disposal of the dead via cremation were constructed. Fifth, it was quite normal for a very high proportion of Birkenau inmates to be unemployed. In the 2 years summer 1942 to summer 1944, as Reitlinger remarks, quote, only a fraction of the starved and ailing Birkenau population had been employed at all, unquote. On April 5, 1944, 15,000 of the 36,000 Birkenau inmates were considered unable to work, while only about 3,000 of the 31,000 other prisoners of the Auschwitz area were considered in this category. A month later, two-thirds of the 18,000 inmates of the Birkenau male camp were classed as immobile, unemployable, and unassigned, and were quartered in sick and quarantine blocks. This makes it impossible, of course, to accept the assumption, so often expressed, that to be sick and unemployable and to be sent to Birkenau meant execution. This has been expressed in particular in connection with sick people being sent from Monowitz to Birkenau, the assumption being reinforced by the fact that such inmates' clothing came back to Monowitz. The return of the clothing, of course, was due to their being transferred from the Farben to the SS budget. Sixth and last, there was an unusually high death rate at Birkenau, although there are some difficulties in estimating the numbers except at particular times. The first major relevant event is the typhus epidemic of the summer of 1942, which resulted in the closing of the Buna factory for 2 months starting around August 1. The major evidence of this is the WRB report, but there is confirming evidence. First, there certainly were typhus epidemics at Auschwitz. Second, the data presented by the Dutch Red Cross, Appendix C, shows that the average death rate at the Birkenau men's camp from July 16 to August 19, 1942, was about 186 per day, with the rates toward the end of the period noticeably higher than those toward the beginning. Third, there exists in Amsterdam a single volume of the Birkenau death book, also discussed in the Netherlands Red Cross report. This volume contains death certificates for the 5 days September 28 to October 2, 1942. The number of deaths is 1,500, and the causes of death that are given are those typical of typhus epidemic conditions, although Reitlinger seems to consider such recorded causes as, quote, weakness of the heart muscles, unquote, and others as, quote, invented fanciful diagnoses of internee doctors, who were trying to save their patients from the transport list or the phenol syringe, unquote. In fact, such causes of death are typical with typhus. Under the typhus fever listing in the Encyclopaedia Britannica, 11th edition, we read, quote, typhus fever may, however, prove fatal during any stage of its progress and in the early convalescence, either from sudden failure of the heart's action, a condition which is especially apt to arise, from the supervention of some nervous symptoms, such as meningitis or of deepening coma, or from some other complication, such as bronchitis. Further, a fatal result sometimes takes place before the crisis from sheer exhaustion, particularly in the case of those whose physical or nervous energies have been lowered by hard work, inadequate nourishment and sleep, or intemperance, unquote. On account of the policy of sending sick people to Birkenau, it appears that the victims of the typhus epidemic got recorded as Birkenau deaths, regardless of where they had been working. The WRB report claims that there were 15 to 20,000 deaths at Auschwitz during the 2 or 3 months of the epidemic. Despite the unreliability of the source, the claim seems consistent, at least in order of magnitude, with such other information as we have, concerning this period at Auschwitz, although there is probably at least some exaggeration. It is also the case, as we shall see below, that the summer of 1942 was by far the worst at Auschwitz. Incidentally, the phenol syringe which Reitlinger mentions comes up in so many places in the literature that it appears to have been real. Mortally ill concentration camp inmates were sometimes killed by phenol injections into the heart. The fact of a very high death rate at Auschwitz during the summer of 1942 is, of course, at best only indirectly material to an extermination problem, because these were recorded deaths from normal reasons, not exterminations carried out in attempted secrecy. They also have nothing to do with Jews as such, although some of the victims were Jews. Reitlinger considers the high death rate at Auschwitz, and offers an estimate of 160 to 179 deaths per day as a normal rate. However, the data he employs is essentially that, which applies to the summer of 1942, which was a particularly catastrophic period. In the connection with these high death rates, we should observe the fact that the extermination mythologists Reitlinger and Hilberg make much over such happenings at Auschwitz, although they recognize the distinction between high death rates and exterminations. It is therefore remarkable, indeed almost incredible, that they do not consider the possibility that the crematories existed on account of these high death rates. On the contrary, they both treat the crematories as having been provided primarily to serve in the extermination program. In establishments that were supposed to be providing desperately needed labor, these high death rates were naturally intolerable, so in late 1942 a special campaign got underway to reduce the concentration camp death rate, and on December 28, 1942, Himmler ordered that the rate, quote, be reduced at all costs, unquote. On January 20, 1943, Glucks, in a circular letter to all concentration camp commanders, ordered that, quote, every means must be used to lower the death rate, unquote. On March 15, 1943, Pohl wrote Himmler that, quote, the state of health of the prisoners sent in by the administration of justice is catastrophic. In all camps, a loss of between at least 25 to 30% is to be reckoned with. Till now, there were 10,191 prisoners, of which 7,587 were assigned to Mauthausen-Gusen. From these, the deaths totaled 3,853, 3,306 of them died in Mauthausen-Gusen. The reason must presumably be that the many prisoners who have been in prisons for years are suffering from physical debility, owing to the transfer to a different milieu. A great number of tuberculosis patients were also delivered, unquote. On April 10, 1943, Pohl requested Himmler's approval of the draft of a letter to the Reich Minister of Justice. The letter, approved and presumably sent, points out that of 12,658 prisoners transferred to concentration camps, 5,935 had died by April 1. Pohl complained in the letter that these, quote, shockingly high mortality figures are due to the fact that the prisons transferring them have literally released inmates who were in the worst possible physical condition, and that in spite of all medical efforts, the death of the prisoners cannot be retarded. I do not wish to support a quarantine station in the concentration camps, unquote. What seems involved here is interdepartmental rivalry or, at least, conflict of interest. The prisons of Germany no doubt had their own economic productive aspects, and were not only reluctant to part with their more healthy prisoners but also eager to part with the more sickly ones. We do not know whether or not Pohl managed to get more cooperation from the prison system. However, on September 30, 1943, he was able to report progress, due mainly to hygienic, nutritional, and procedural measures. He presented the Reichsfuhrer SS2 tables, reproduced in the print and ebook editions of this book, with a promise that, allowing for the onset of the cold weather, the results achieved would be of a permanent nature. Thus, after more than a half year of a campaign to reduce the death rate in the camps, Auschwitz still had about 80 per day on the average. Because, as had been seen, almost all those unable to work were at Birkenau, it is certain that almost all of these deaths occurred there. Auschwitz also seems to have received some rather bad selections of inmates from other concentration camps. The Netherlands Red Cross report on Auschwitz, Volume 2, also offers some data on the death rates at Auschwitz for 1942 to 1943. For the period October 30, 1942 to February 25, 1943, the death rate is specified as about 360 per week on the average, and about 185 per week for the period February 26 to July 1, 1943. It is also said that a total of 124 of the Dutch Jews who entered Birkenau in July to August 1942, mentioned above, died in the period October 30, 1942 to July 1, 1943. However, their figures for total deaths seem somewhat low and difficult to reconcile with the data presented above, so there may be some error or misunderstanding here. It is perfectly obvious that these deaths, however deplorable and whatever the nature and location of the responsibility, had nothing to do with extermination or with Jews as such. From the point of view of the higher SS administration, they were catastrophic, and efforts were made to bring them under control. It is not at all remarkable that, with such death rates, cremation and mortuary facilities anticipating worst period death rates of even hundreds per day existed at Auschwitz. The Auschwitz death rate improved but slightly during the course of the war. During 1944, when the inmate population of the camp had expanded to 100,000 or more, probably on account of territorial losses in the east, which forced evacuations of labor camps, the death rate was 350 to 500 per week at Birkenau, which, as we have seen, accounted for almost the entire Auschwitz death rate. It is a tragic fact that, even in modern times, camps established during wartime have amounted to death traps for many sent to them. The basic causes for such conditions have been similar: people thrown together chaotically in hastily organized camps, with inadequate sanitary measures, and an uncertain situation as regards food and other supplies. Thus, during the American Civil War, the POW camps in the north, such as Rock Island and Camp Douglas, experienced death rates of 2% to 4% per month. These figures were even exceeded in camps in the south, such as Florence, where diarrhea and scurvy caused 20 to 50 deaths per day, in a prisoner population of about 12,000. Conditions at Andersonville were even worse, and 13,000 of the 50,000 Union POWs who were interned there perished. During the 1899 to 1902 Boer War in South Africa, about 120,000 noncombatant white Boers and 75,000 black Africans were placed in British concentration camps. For about a year, the Boer mortality rate ranged from 120 to 340 deaths per thousand per year, 1.1% to 3.4% per month, while the Boer infant mortality rate, due chiefly to epidemics of measles, was as high as 600 per thousand per year, 7.35% per month. About 20,000 Boer women and children died in these camps. During World War I, the Germans mixed Russian POWs with those of other nationalities, resulting in typhus epidemics in their POW camps. Conditions were strikingly similar to those experienced in the World War II concentration camps. We have seen that Russians were used as labor at the concentration camps, especially at Auschwitz, so they were no doubt one of the principal sources of typhus. Because they were not considered regular concentration camp inmates, it is not clear whether or not they were included in the camp death figures which were reviewed above. However, it is certain that they contributed to the overall death rates at the camps, and that their bodies were disposed of in the same crematories, but numbers are not available. A ridiculous feature of all this, as it strikes the student of the subject, appears in NMT Volume 5, which summarizes Case 4, U.S. vs. Pole. In Section B, the concentration camp system, we are presented with documents which show that the camps experienced remarkably high death rates. These have just been summarized above. Then in Section E, the extermination program, we are presented with documents showing that the Germans were building crematories at these camps at the time of the high death rates. Apparently, it is believed that nobody would actually read one of these volumes, or maybe the compilers of the volumes did not read them. Taking into account the different death rates, we can see that the number of muffles at Auschwitz was completely comparable to those which existed at camps where there were no exterminations. In 1942, crematories were constructed at Dachau and at Sachsenhausen, each contained four muffles. At Dachau, a crematory consisting of two muffles had existed prior to 1942, and the older crematory continued to be used after 1942. It is most likely that the same situation with respect to an earlier crematory held at Sachsenhausen. At Buchenwald, the pre-war cremation facilities were those which existed in the nearby towns of Weimar and Jena. After the war started, crematories were constructed at the camp, and by the end of 1941, Buchenwald had a two triple muffle oven crematory. It appears that the Weimar crematory continued to be used until the end of the war. It is also possible that concentration camp crematories, whether at Auschwitz, Dachau, or elsewhere, were used to dispose of the bodies of people who had nothing to do with the camps, for example Russian POWs. This, then, is our view of the death camp aspect of the Nazi concentration camps. It is a view which does not harmonize with those of Christofferson and of Staglick, who saw no high death rates, and are not convinced that there existed extensive cremation facilities at Auschwitz. Our view is based on the relevant prosecution documents and comparable material, and their views are based on their observations at Auschwitz in 1944. It may seem that their observations are more to be trusted than the documentary material, but I believe that a careful consideration of the matter resolves the point in favor of our theory, while not denying their observations. It is true that there exists a possibility of forged documents. Indeed, it is more than a possibility. We shall see that there was considerable forgery of documents at Nuremberg. However, it does not appear that the documents dealing with deaths in the camps and with the constructions of crematories were forged, for the simple reason that there is absolutely nothing about extermination in them, as the reader can verify by consulting the selections of documents in NMT Volume 5. They speak of a very high death rate, at certain times, in penal institutions, concentration camps, which a relatively small country, fighting against overwhelming odds for its existence, was attempting to exploit for labor. That high death rates might have been one consequence, is perfectly plausible. While the documents we have reviewed say nothing of extermination, they are nevertheless somewhat unsatisfactory in the sense that one does not get a full picture from them, in regard to the causes of the death rates and the specific victims involved. The unhealthy prisoners contributed by the Ministry of Justice do not explain everything. The picture must be guessed and inferred, so here we will offer our impressions. German concentration camps during the 30s had only punitive and security functions, and no economic function. After the war with Russia got started, the camps underwent rapid expansion, and also assumed their economic roles. Thus in 1942, there were three things happening in the camps. A. The rapid expansion was accompanied by the general chaos, unanticipated problems, and organizational difficulties which are common when large new enterprises are put into operation. This is particularly true of Auschwitz, which was a new camp in the process of rapidly expanding into the largest of all camps. B. The continued German victories and advances in Russia resulted in hordes of Russian POWs, some of whom were absorbed by the camps. C. Unhealthy prisoners were contributed by the Ministry of Justice. There were probably other problems, but these three factors seem to me sufficient to explain a high death rate in late 1942 to early 1943. By late 1943, the death rate, while still deplorably high, was relatively under control as compared to the previous year, and remained under control until the collapse at the end of the war. The statement of the Birkenau camp commander, Appendix D, indicates that at Auschwitz, by 1944, the deaths occurred primarily among ordinary criminals who had been transferred out of prisons. I have seen no documents comparable to those we have reviewed, which deal with high death rates for late 1943 or any later period. Now we are in a position to consider the observations of Christofferson and of Staglick, which included neither crematories nor a high death rate at Auschwitz. Very simple considerations support their observations. First, deaths are naturally not things that the Auschwitz camp administration would have advertised. Both the deaths and the associated cremations would naturally have been concealed to the extent that such concealment was possible. Thus in mid-1943, Pohl complained to concentration camp commanders that, too commonly, crematory buildings were situated in excessively public locations where all kinds of people could gaze at them. In response to Pohl's complaint, Huss had a belt of trees planted around crematories 2 and 3. Moreover, it was the policy to carry corpses to the crematory only in the evening. That Christofferson and Staglick, who had only slight contacts with Birkenau, were unaware of the existence of a high death rate or of large crematories, is perfectly understandable. The role that Birkenau plays in the hoax is very simple. Like any large industrial operation, Auschwitz was organized in a systematic manner, thought to be of the greatest efficiency. The unemployed were quartered at Birkenau. Thus, the transit camps, to be discussed again in Chapter 7, were at Birkenau. This explains the existence of the Gypsy and Jewish camps there. Also, the sick and the very sick and the dying and, perhaps, the dead were sent to Birkenau, and such concentration of the ill naturally meant that Birkenau was a quote-unquote death camp, complete with mortuary and cremation facilities, if one chooses to describe things thus. Indeed, of the order of one half of all of the deaths in the entire German concentration camp system for 1942 to 1944 occurred at Birkenau. While the whole thing looks quite foolish when examined closely, as we have done in these chapters, the propaganda inventors obviously made a very rational choice in deciding to claim Birkenau as an extermination camp. The death rate in the concentration camp system was very high. It was near its highest at Auschwitz, which was the largest German concentration camp, and the Auschwitz deaths were concentrated at Birkenau.